Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HR Latte, your first cup of talent management whipped to perfection.
Hey everybody, it's Rayanne Thorne. Thanks for joining me today on HR Latte, brought to you by Dovetail Software. Thanks so much for being here. I'm very excited to continue my series on recruiters or talent management goes tech. I have Phil Hendrickson on the line here with me. Hey, Phil, thanks for joining me today.
Hello and good morning.
We kind of jump right in here on HR Latte. This series is specifically designed to talk to once a recruiter, always a recruiter, once an HR professional, always an HR professional. You kind of think with that hat, it's never too far away from you. But I'm talking to folks that used to be in the trenches working as practitioners that have made the shift and what I've been calling throughout the series and have hopped over to the dark side and decided to join a vendor, which Phil recently did. So I'm going to give you a chance, Phil, now to talk a little bit about, tell us about yourself, what you used to do, and what you're doing now for a really great company, HR tech company, recruiting tech company called Qualify.
Cool. Yes, thank you. And first, I just want to say thank you for doing this series. Our industry is forever changing, and people in it are evolving their professional careers, and it's wonderful that you're shining a spotlight on a particular niche. Around people's move from, because I don't know if anyone has done that in the past, and I feel very honored to be part of this, but I'm especially grateful for the lights that you shine in some particular areas in our industry. I think it's very helpful, and it probably brings useful information to people to understand what's happening. A little bit about me. My background goes way back to exec search and being in the industry from a search practitioner point of view, and then I went in-house. So I went into large companies to build sourcing functions, sourcing strategies, diversity strategies, and along the way I had a chance to manage vendors and different kinds of solutions for large and small recruiting teams. So going back to Sapient and then to Fannie Mae, then I moved out here to Seattle and worked at Starbucks for many years and then Apple, and then I recently joined Qualify. And in all of these, I had a chance to work with fantastic recruiters and sourcers and explore new technologies and new services that make recruiting more efficient, more effective, that make recruiters happy, and some of them that make recruiters frustrated. I've managed recruiting vendors and solutions for many years, so I'm quite familiar with what goes into a solution sell and what goes into an implementation. And integrations and how they are adopted by end users and being able to measure their effectiveness and understand if there's a usefulness, an ROI on buying and using them. So that's been my past in a nutshell. And now, as you say, I'm on the dark side. I have a chance to to solve problems for companies, and I enjoy it every day because rather than working at one company and solving their problems, I have a chance to help different companies, both large and small, and work with innovative leaders who really want to think about talent problems in a new way.
That's very exciting. So tell us, what does Qualify do? What is the product?
The product is about candidate engagement. So we curate engagement. We remove jobs from the conversation. So there are enough vendors out there today that push jobs and job distribution and talk about jobs and email alerts about jobs. There are plenty of resume databases out there, profile databases. The jobs conversation is a full marketplace. So we are not in that at all. We are about eliminating the black hole that candidates feel when they reach out to a brand. So that's a big problem that we solve for brands today. It allows companies to actually get to know the people that are following them, that understand their company, their values, their solutions. It allows companies to engage around ideas, around questions and answers. It's a full, meaningful community that attracts people to a brand, allows recruiters to see their followers, to understand their followers from a profile perspective, something that's not new. So we don't hide from the fact that people have profiles. We're delighted by that. But it allows people and recruiters to see people's professional profiles, but also hear their voice and understand their passions, their interests, and what they want to do and what they have to offer. That's qualifying in a nutshell.
Yeah,
think brand-based recruiting, think engagement.
Okay. I love that. And one thing that leads to, why should an HR professional be concerned about this, is when you engage with the right candidates and they end up being hired, you have a higher level, higher percentage of retaining those placements that become loyal, dedicated employees for the organization, which is a problem too. We know that retention is a problem. And the sooner we start thinking about how important that whole process is, the pre-hire process, the quicker we'll understand how to hang on to the talent that we've spent so much time and so much money to bring in-house, right? So I love what you guys are doing.
Yes. And can I say just a brief bit about retention? I'm very happy that you mentioned that. I just returned from filming a docufilm about retention. When you said that word, it's something that I've been thinking about a lot, and I had a chance to talk with 10 other professionals in our industry about how the best companies today are retaining their talent. And interestingly enough, the conversation started, as you said, with sourcing. How do you find, engage, and then recruit people who are a culture fit for your company? Many times companies wait for people to just apply, and then recruiters are in a situation where they're looking through tens and hundreds and thousands of applicants. But when you are proactively looking for people, how do you find those and understand those that are a culture fit who will be successful at your company? And the conversation about retention started there, and I thought that was very interesting. But you're correct.
Yeah, I love that.
Understanding people's motivations and their culture fit is a big piece of making a good hiring decision. And we sit as a platform there and allow people to introduce themselves, put their best foot forward, and let companies identify those great culture fit candidates before you start having a conversation about a rec or a job.
Right. There's been for years and years and years, and this can go back to 2007, 2008, when there were several third-party recruiters that sat on the sideline and screamed that recruiting does not fall under HR. It's not part of the HR function. We are a separate entity. We have nothing to do with HR. And we know now, 10 years later, that's not true anymore, that it is an imperative part of company growth. CEOs are very concerned about talent acquisition. They want to make sure that the right people are coming on board, that they are, like I said earlier, a dedicated workforce. And it does start in that arena of sourcing. It starts when you are establishing and understanding the culture of that company. And many third-party and executive recruiters will tell you that now, that it's imperative for them to understand the culture. They don't want to have to redo a search. They don't want to have to give back their fee when a candidate or a placement falls through, right? Or the hiring organization becomes disgruntled or unhappy with the placement that the third party or outside recruiter has brought to the table. So it is an important part. And, you know, there's also been the argument that there was no such thing as employment branding. Well, there is, and it needs to be based in truth, and it needs to be based in logic for that organization. How can you bring the right person if you don't understand what the organization is like, if you don't understand what it's like to work within that department, if you don't understand what it's like to sit at that desk or in that cubicle every day? You cannot possibly hire the person that's going to stay for 1, 2, 3, 4 years, 5 years, indefinitely, right? And so I think it's really important. This what qualifying is doing is incredible. So you've got this. I mean, you've got this great career as a talent acquisition professional. Why make the switch? Why take the job at Qualify?
Good question. You know, I was at a point in my career where I really wanted to make a difference, and I could continue to help one well-known brand hire more people, and I have a lot of fun doing that. Or I could turn my efforts at this point in my life to help different sized companies, different innovative leaders solve some of their most challenging problems. And that's my motivation in a nutshell, that I've worked at enough large, big brands, and I didn't want to necessarily go do it again. I have plenty of friends who work for large and wonderful companies, and I have a chance to work with them now and help them solve their unique challenges. And that's, to me, exciting. It's exciting to be part of something new in our industry, to be sitting on this side and see how companies approach problems differently. I'm learning every single day. When you sit inside a company, you learn more about your own people and your own challenges, but things move slowly. From my perspective here, I have a chance to talk with companies that have challenges that I've never even considered. And so it's a learning experience for me, but my primary motivation was in, at this point in my career, being able to give back to the industry and be part of something that is new, a new approach. We don't have to become the biggest and the best solution out there. We are just going to be dedicated to being a real solution, solving real problems every day. And
so
the people who get it do get
problems,
it.
Not making them, right? So many tech companies just create more problems than they solve. So it's nice to hear that. It's nice to hear that there's a focus, that there is an effort to be an actual, real, truthful solution to a problem that is evident, that is ongoing, that requires some attention, right? So coming as the practitioner to this dark side, Phil, is there any advice that you can give to HR professionals, to recruiters, to hiring managers when they're looking to select a recruiting technology or an HR technology? Is there any advice you can give? What are some of the things that they should look for or remember when selecting a tech?
Yeah. This is a very important question, and I'll try to be as brief as possible because it was such a part of my life for so long. I hope I can impart some meaningful suggestions here. But I would say, I would go back to what we were just discussing. Before you select a vendor, a solution, ask yourself, what problem are we solving? There are lots of solutions out there. There's lots of shiny objects. There's lots of solutions that everyone else is using, and you may feel and may be pressured by your team, your recruiters, your colleagues to pursue solutions because other people are doing it. There are a lot of solutions out there, and they do things, and some of them do things well, but it's your role for your team and your company to make sure that you're choosing value-creating solutions. And if they're value-creating, they are doing something essential for your company or your recruiters. They're saving your recruiters time. They're connecting you with, as you were talking about, great talent. And they'll be used once you buy them. So consider problem solving. Consider the business case for your solution. Are you going to be able to go to your boss, go to the COO, the CFO, and say, we've saved money, we've made more hires, we've reduced some important metric or improved some important metric by using this. We're not just throwing money at it because we learned about it at our last HR Tech or ERE conference, but it's a real solution. Too many recruiters feel bombarded by new things they need to use, new tools that they need to integrate into their daily process. Recruiters have a lot on their plate, and if you are a good, thoughtful leader, you will be considerate of your recruiting team and how much time and bandwidth they have to accommodate yet another tool. So that's as brief as I can be, but start with understanding whether or not you're solving a problem that's real for you and your team.
Yeah, that's really important. And to that, I want to ask you a question. I haven't asked this to any of my other guests in this series, and I think it's a valuable question to ask. You know, back when I was recruiting, you know, we had a telephone, right? We had I used an ACT database, right?
Yes.
So that was our CRM or our customer database, right? Or our client database, our candidate, what we call our candidate database, right? So do you think that a recruiter today can survive with only a telephone anymore?
Good question. Sadly, no, for most recruiters in most big companies. I don't think they can. I still think that the phone is the most useful and important tool that a recruiter has, because most of recruiting happens there. The real getting
right.
the deal done, the real outreach
right.
Happens there. But recruiters live and work within organizations that have legal requirements and processes that require certain amounts of technology that they have to use. So the long and the short answer to your question is, I wish it were the case that
right.
the
right.
phone was all. The phone is still the mighty tool. And recruiters that aren't good at it won't be good at their role. But recruiters today should become familiar with different kinds of technology because they eventually will have to learn new tools and new technologies and become proficient in them. It's just a fact of our industry today.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's flop the earlier question that I asked you. You know, I asked you about what you need to remember as a recruiter and HR pro. Let's flop it a little bit and say, okay, so what do you need to know as a recruiter and HR pro that wants to launch an industry specific technology company? So if you're going into, if you're getting ready to launch a tool, a product, what should you know about who you're selling to? What should you remember? What are some key things that you should remember?
Yeah, and this is also a riff on the last question, and that is you need to understand, if you're launching a company, what problem are you solving for the industry? So you need to first know the industry well enough to know the players in it, the industries, what your, let's use our recruiting space as an example, to know what are the challenges that companies and recruiters face, both large and small, both agency and non-agency. What is the day-to-day life of recruiting? And when you understand the industry well enough, then you can understand what are the challenges that companies face today. And that's where you build a foundation to know if what you're going to deliver is something that will really solve a problem and not, as you mentioned earlier, create more problems.
Right.
I strongly believe that if you have a tool or a solution that is unique and offers a better way to accomplish a task that needs to be done, you're creating value and you'll be rewarded for it.
I would agree. And to that end, why do you think so many tech companies fail? Why do you think so many of these tech startups fail and are just not able to get it off the ground? Is it because they didn't listen, because they didn't set off to solve a problem, they just had a cool idea and ran with it? Why do you think they fail?
I think they fail for several reasons. One of them that comes up many times is operational discipline. So that's being able to not only create a solution, create value, create a tool that is useful, but be able to do it over and over again at scale. Operational discipline is something that I see many startup companies and even companies that have been around for years fail at, and it creates lots of frustration, downtime. It's challenging when you use something and then it stops working, when an update creates a new set of problems that you didn't expect. So tools that you purchase, that you train your team to use, you want them to continue to work, or else, believe me, because I've been in the seat when you have a team of 50 recruiters and the new tool that you rolled out and trained on is not working. Recruiters will let you know right away, and you'll spend the rest of your day trying to solve problems. And you'll feel the hair in the back of your neck, you'll start to sweat, and you'll start to get angry, and you'll ask yourself, did I make the right decision in choosing this platform? So yes, operational discipline is one thing that it's, and you know, it's easy to say, but it's much harder to fulfill because
very
it requires
hard.
On the technology side, on being able to scale, it's easy to create a solution that three people are using, but if 1,000 people are using the solution all at the same time, is your platform able to work with 3, with 1,000, with 10,000, with 100,000 users all doing the same thing at the same time? That's not easy to do. So Operational discipline is one. I'd say culture is another, and you've talked about this for many years, but startups are groups of people, and startups are small. If you're a company that's got 10,000 people in it, if you make a few poor hires, it's not fatal. But if you're a company of 10 people, even a single bad hire can be very detrimental.
Exactly right.
So creating a good corporate culture, understanding your leaders, the founder, is incredibly important. When you have a small group of people, making sure that you know, you trust your fellow workers, that your company and your company's vision is one built on integrity. I'd say that's incredibly important for any startup and any person who's thinking about joining a startup, because it will become your family. It will be where you pour your heart and your life into. So choose wisely and start with understanding the people and the culture of the company that you're looking to join.
That is very good advice. I wish I had spoken to you a year ago. Very, very, very good advice. I'm going to ask you a little twist on the question, why do they succeed? Do you think that there is luck involved? Is it just sometimes luck and timing?
Yes. There are lucky things that happen to some companies. They happen to be at the right place at the right time. I don't think that luck is all. I think that a lot of what appears to be luck is built on a foundation of people trying for many years to make things happen and being reborn and getting back at it and having discipline and commitment. But there are certainly good times to be in a certain industry when there is great interest, great passion, when there's an appetite for new things. Obviously, the economy plays a role. I'm thinking about the industry that we're in today. Recruiting was very different in 2007 and 2008. We've come a long way since then. The economy is picking up. Companies are growing quickly. This is becoming a candidate marketplace today. And if you're a recruiting solution, if you're a great recruiter, if you're a recruiting technology or a talent management technology, this year is a better year than 2008. So it could be that there are great solutions that tried and failed only because the economy was in the dumps. There are certain things that I guess at the core of your question, there are some things that you can control, and there are some things that you can't. I'm excited by our current economy and companies' interest in hiring people and retaining them. It's nice to look out and see that recruiters are in such great demand today that we really can't find enough of them. Companies are trying to find people. Talent is becoming harder to find. It's becoming more expensive, and it's becoming harder to retain the great talent that you've worked so hard to find as well. So, it's a great day to be a recruiter, and I think it's an exciting time to be in our industry as companies invest in people and invest in the technology that helps connect people with their companies.
Phil, you are somebody with a great deal of integrity. You have been a very successful practitioner. When you consider what you need to do personally, I'd love if you could share two or three key things that you do on a regular basis, either for your organization, for the clients that you serve, that help you to do your job more effectively, more efficiently, finding what I like to call that better way. What are some things that you can share that you do personally to make sure you do your job better?
Three. I'll try to keep it to three. I'd say first is remain focused. Working in a startup is different than working in a large organization. It's easy to get distracted and chase tangential ideas. So I think remaining focused, both as a person and as a company, is incredibly important. You want to make sure that your focus is around staying true to your vision, what you wake up every day to do, and what your company is built around. What is your value proposition, both you as a person and your company as a solution in the industry. So remaining focused is incredibly important to me and to, in my view, great startups. You asked earlier what can be detrimental, and I'd say is forgetting what your solution is all about and trying to be all things to all people. When you know what your value proposition is, stay focused on that and hold yourself and your teammates accountable to that singular focus. I'd say two would be I keep a work routine. That's just me. I'm a creature of habit. Maybe it's because I'm an older person, who knows. But I work well with a predictable schedule, a dedicated workplace. I do work at home on occasion, but I much prefer my office, which is a few miles from my home. It's a place where I think about work things. It's my work space. So when I enter it, my mind turns to work things, not home or family things.
Right.
And I'd say third would be staying connected. Stay connected to your team members, and that means constant communication, hangouts, calls, etc. Many times at a startup, you may be working with a remote team, and I applaud companies that understand that having a remote workforce is necessary. We were just talking about this the last few days at Talent 42, that being able to have a remote workforce means you're able to have the best talent, and you're able to make great talent decisions because you don't require that people relocate, that people will have an option to live where they want and where they can afford and still work for your company. That gives your company great flexibility when the world is your oyster from a talent perspective. And that is built on discipline and on technology, but on remaining connected. It's easier to connect with your team, obviously, if you're all in the same office. So when you're not, making sure that you remain connected to your fellow colleagues is vitally important. And I just say tangentially, it's important for you to stay connected to your industry. I think that goes without saying, but remaining connected to what people are doing, what companies are thinking and saying, what innovation is happening. Read, go to conferences, talk to smart people like you, Rayanne. It's vitally important to remain connected, not only with your peers and your colleagues, but with what's happening in the industry. And then lastly, I guess this is the fourth, so forgive me, stay healthy. keeping an eye on your health is always important.
Oh, very important.
Working in a routine, as I was saying earlier, health should be part of your routine. If it's just stretching or if it's running or if it's going to the gym, make time for yourself. When you remain healthy, you'll remain wise and productive, and you'll do better and your company will do better.
All great, great, great pieces of advice. You are the first one to, this is a question I ask often because I think it's so important for us to share what works for us, right? And you are the first person to say, stay healthy. I mean, that's so important. And you don't have anything if you don't have your health. I mean, we've heard that over and over and over again. And we don't realize the impact that it has on our work, on our relationships, on our home life. And it's so important to just think that first, you know, have that be part of your daily thought. I need to stay healthy. It's so vital.
Yeah. And you know what,
Rayanne,
let me say this. And because that's something that is essential, if you are a leader and you have a team, make sure that you give your teammates cover so that they can look after their health. People look to you as a leader, and if you expect them to be in their seat for 9 hours a day, they'll do that because they want to do what you want them to do. But if you give them cover and say, I want you to make sure that you get to the gym today or go running or whatever you know that your team members want, as a leader, it's vitally important for you to make sure that you're looking after your team and making them feel good and comfortable with looking after themselves is very rewarding and will be appreciated by your teammates. And you'll have a more effective team for doing so, and you'll have a healthier company. But I just wanted to say that to those people who lead teams today, it helps when your boss says, I want you to make sure that you do this. And your boss turns to you and say, hey, Phil, did you get to the gym today? I know you, whenever I looked over, you've been at your desk all day. Make sure you get to the gym. That helps. That really does. You know, your team looks to you for advice and for encouragement and make sure to do that.
Yeah, that's really important, and it's nice to know that there are some bosses out there that are actually doing that and consider that an important part of their employees' lives. You have been a triple threat here on this show. This is your third appearance on HR Latte. Nobody else has that honor. Actually, I don't think anybody else has been a second guest. My husband, who has listened to and watched different, content that I've developed, whether it's been through LaVoie Entertainment or, you know, the radio shows that I've done, has heard you speak, has seen you speak on a number of occasions. And he doesn't really care a lot about my industry, you know, but he has commented every time he's heard you speak that guy knows what he's talking about. That guy is an expert. So I appreciate having you bring your expertise to HR Latte. Given that this is your third appearance, you've answered my quick hit faves before, but we'll do them real quick because you never know. Sometimes some things change. Favorite food?
Okay, it's summer. So in my view, summer is about ceviche, sangria, and grape salsa.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
so
now I'm hungry. That's great. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Do you have a new favorite book? Anything new you've read
you
lately?
You know what? This is an interesting question. Just yesterday at Talent 42, Glenn Cathy was giving a wonderful presentation, and he reminded the audience, he reminded me of a book that I read a while ago called The Art of Human Hacking. And I just realized that I have to buy that book again because I think it's in my garage in a box and I'll never find it. But I remember reading it years ago. And I'm going to have to go back and grab it again. And many thanks to Glenn Cathy to remind the audience about a wonderful book in our industry, The Art of Human Hacking.
Fantastic. I'm going to have to check that out. I've never read that. So thank you for bringing that to our attention. Your favorite place?
Okay. My favorite place these days. We just joined a pool for the family, and my kids are just all over it. So our favorite place these days is hanging out at the pool, and that's just delightful.
How fun!
Yes. That's
And is that your favorite thing to do these days then too, or do you still have a favorite thing to do?
You know what? My favorite thing to do these days, and I'm going to have to make it two because I have two kids. But my favorite thing is playing catch with my son. He's become excited and passionate about baseball. All of a sudden, he's just finished his first season. He's collecting baseball cards, and he's excited to go to a baseball game on Father's Day with me. But he calls me out into the front yard and just wants to play catch. And I'm like, okay, this is just delightful. And I can't just say that because I have a daughter, and I enjoy watching her do gymnastics. So she practices gymnastics, and she's almost nailed doing a complete handstand on her own.
Wow.
So, yes. Yeah. So those are the things that I like to do these days. And it's all about kids.
Phil, thank you so much for joining me on this really important series, and I appreciate your words at the top of the show. It's become a mission of mine to talk about things that have never been talked about or to dive in deeper. So it's nice that you were able to join me to talk about this really interesting topic, recruiters or practitioners that actually go to the tech side, the dark side, and it's been a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Rayanne. My pleasure.
Everybody, make sure you tune in next week. I'll be speaking with Kelly Robinson, who founded Broadbean Technology long ago. Gosh, it's got to be close to 15 years ago. And he was a recruiter for many years, ran his own firm. And he'll be joining us on Tuesday. And on Thursday, Perry Blake Gorman of Archively will be joining us, former recruiter as well, in the big city. The Big Apple, and she has made the shift and is now a tech founder living in the San Francisco Bay Area. So join us then. As always, it's a pleasure. Go out and make it a great day.